Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, it's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through the Fan. Let's talk a little bit of college football here with you. Some college football, and Mike Fisher's coming up at 3:20. I saw on the 40-yard dash there, Pat 40, veteran college football writer. He wrote today in his college football column, Herman still has a long way to go before Texas is back. Had some strong words for him. There is a lot of truth in here. If I was in charge, I'd give him two more years. I think you got to let a recruiting cycle run through, but man, Charlie Strong did have some decent recruiting classes. Tom Herman has had some good ones. You should have better players in the rest of your conference, and to be sitting at four losses now, it's highly, highly disappointing.
I would get rid of him.
This is enough for you?
Yeah, because he didn't come into a talent-depleted team. Charlie Strong had done a good job. I'm not saying a great job, but he did a good job of recruiting. It wasn't like, man, Texas for the last 3 years has been getting just three-star and at most four-star guys. He had a good team. So whoever comes into Texas, they can immediately be good because they do get talent still. It's just for some reason ever since I'm forgetting the North Carolina coach that was
Mack Brown.
Ever since Mack Brown kind of gave up working hard, like, they just can't find somebody to get all that talent to actually be good on a football field.
It's interesting you bring up Mack Brown because after losing to Iowa State, the Longhorns are 6-4, 4-3 in the Big 12. They're 23-14 under Tom. It's nearly identical to the last three seasons under Mack Brown, which were considered a major disappointment. So it's a great point. It's just been a continuation of that disappointment in the late Charlie Strong years. And 40 says, beware of the fan base that reads too much into a non-playoff bowl victory. You beat Georgia, all the voters, all the fans were like, oh yeah, it's on.
And yeah, I kind of wrote that one off too, and I know Texas fans didn't like it, but I kind of viewed that bowl game as, for Texas, you were going to play against a good team, and for Georgia, you were a team that was disappointed. You didn't make the playoff, and we're like, oh, whatever. And I know you show up and you play on that day and you played football and you beat them, but
your upperclassmen have been drinking for 3 weeks by that point,
I guess. But I mean, they got to start with probably the defensive coordinator, because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm pretty sure they're somewhere around 80th in the country at defense.
Yikes.
And at Texas, it's weird because when you think about Texas, and it's a lot like the Cowboys, you shouldn't think about what they were once upon a time. It should be whatever they've earned to be talked about lately. And right now, they're a team in the Big 12. Like, Texas is Iowa State. They're a competitive Big 12 team that, if, you know, when you play them, if you're a good team, you should beat Texas. That's the way it is. I thought when they got Ellinger, it was like, hey, you've got a quarterback. So now all of a sudden, Texas, you could be back. You've got a quarterback. You're in good shape. But now you don't have a defense. If you're Texas, how in the world do you not have a defense? How does the University of Texas not have a dominant front four? How do they not have great linebackers? How do they not have great secondary play? How does the University of Texas not go into every single NFL draft year and we talk about the multiple guys that are going to go in the first round? If you don't have that at Texas, you're failing to develop the players because you're getting the players.
You're in the state of Texas. You're in the heart of Texas where you arguably have the best talent in the country to recruit, and most of them would like to go to your school. Some of them end up not going, but you get enough to be a top, I will say, 15. You should be a top 15 team almost every year. The only other thing I can compare it to, and they're maybe down a little bit because of cheating, it's not like I follow them too much, but USC. USC in California should always be a top 15 school in the country because of the talent around them and how many, I think, kids want to go to USC. I know most kids want to go to Texas here, and you just shouldn't be a team that can't be a top 25 team on a consistent basis with that much talent.
I do think once you lose the momentum of winning, your recruiting does take a step back, but still you're getting enough that you have a talent, like, advantage over at least half the conference.
They play pretty much the same schedule as Baylor. Baylor should not be better. Now, I think they play each other this week, so we'll find out actually who's better on the field. But Baylor shouldn't have a better record than UT. And great for Baylor fans. I'm not knocking on you. It just goes to show your coach is way better than Texas's coach. Your assistant coaches at Baylor are way better than Texas's assistant coaches because you guys are winning with what's considered out of high school less talent than what the UT coaches get.
Well, you know, obviously Tom Herman's up for evaluation, and I think the idea that, you know, maybe his previous stops where he wasn't solely responsible for gathering the talent or he arrived at a place that had good talent and now building it up and developing it, I think it's a legitimate criticism of his. And, you know, Forty writes that he is now essentially doing what Matt Rhule and Gary Patterson and Mike Gundy are doing. You've just assumed a role slightly above 500 as a team not named Oklahoma in the Big 12.
Agreed. I mean, they went and played it. When you play Iowa State, when Iowa State beats you, it's going to be because they are better at coaching. They're better at taking the players that they have and developing them and preparing them to play on Saturdays. That's it. There is no other way that you lose to Iowa State because their football players, when they get to campus, are not better than your football players when they get to campus. There's no way. But yet Texas goes out and Iowa State throws for 350 yards, has 200-yard receivers, has 100-yard running back, and Texas can't run the football in Iowa State. That's not something that's supposed to happen. And Matt Campbell is one of the hottest names in college football because of what he's done at Iowa State and at his stop before that. But that's just – it's an organizational failure. And it's Tom – like, the best thing about Alabama, Alabama gets great recruits. But there's a reason that when we get to the draft, we're talking about the multiple first-rounders every year. It's because they take those players and the way that they coach them and the way that they develop them, they turn them into guys that are going to be impact players when they play on Sundays.
Yeah.
How is Texas not doing that? How is that possible?
Well, you know, I think you might look into the entitlement that was definitely creeping in for a lot of Mac Brown's, you know, later part of his career.
How does Alabama not have entitlement?
Because
that's
you have
part of your culture.
You have a coach who's a tyrant about preventing it, you know, and you know, that's, I think it's a gift to be able to avoid it.
Alabama, I know we're about to play the Patriots. How are the Patriots not tired of winning? I mean, I watched the Dallas Cowboys get tired of winning when I was in high school. They just seemed to be like, they still had a lot of the players that had won Super Bowls. It just, they were like, man, we got three. And they just were, it was like this thing of like, they couldn't push forward anymore. And I think people like Nick Saban, people like Bill Belichick are so special that they can keep it at such a high level. And I don't know how they do it, but they are able to accomplish it.
Yeah, you know, once you've had that level of success, now it's kind of a privilege to be there. You know, and players don't want to be on the outside or even on the coach's bad side. They want to be in his doghouse. You know, it's like some of the great players that we've grown up watching, and I always talk about Magic Johnson and Vlade Divac. It was clear on those Laker teams, nobody wanted to disappoint Magic. And I think Nick Saban is such a figure that can get you to where you want to go. Now it kind of perpetuates itself. Nobody wants to disappoint Saban. He's created the standard. And if you take a step or say anything outside of that line, he can cut your ass. Because of the success that he's had, he's been recruiting a dude that can do your job almost as good. You just got to wait in line for your turn. And once it's created that kind of a machine, and, you know, you do have to have balls because Belichick will send you packing, won't he? Randy Moss, go. Antonio Brown, go. You know, and it's not just Belichick. It's the owner, too, that has massive standards. We're not going to overlook anything. And when you have that standard for some of the best players on the team and your real best players, your real core is willing to walk in line with that, it becomes a machine. And it's hard to build. I don't know if Belichick could go elsewhere and build it back. But once it's in place, boy, that thing can really roll.
And does anything about Tom Herman's tenure make you think that he's that guy?
No, I think he's a mid-level, like a solid mid-level coach. Back at Houston, if he went to SMU, you know, if I just don't think he can lead a big organization like the UT Longhorns.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, there's a lot to overcome. I would think 3 years in, there would be a lot more signs that the turnaround was happening.
I just think when you get the guy, you're going to know. Like Mac Brown came in, and maybe it's revisionist history and I can't remember, but when Mac Brown came in, within 2 years, you knew that they hired the right guy. Like Texas is going to get back to maybe not national championship status, but they're going to be a team that's going to live in the top 10. It's really, you're just not going to go into UT. Usually you're not going to go into UT with bad players.
Well, Herman was reached for comment on the disappointment afterwards and said they have every right to be disappointed if they are true supporters of the fans who are quite upset. He says, I do want to clarify something that's been eating at me for 2 days, though. I had taken that to be, were we fooled, were we duped, tricked, or whatever it is. But when you lose a game, any game, you were outcoached. And he said, I want to clarify the context of what I understood that question to be. So he did talk about that and, you know, his quote from Saturday of being outcoached. And, you know, I think that's one of those things you say after the game. And now the media is really holding your feet to the fire. And maybe it'll be a quote that kind of turns the tide, because I think a lot of Longhorn fans have been trying to be as patient as possible, yeah. Right? You don't want to do this again. Three coaches post Mac Brown.
But how long do you keep waiting on? And to me, like, this is where I agree with you, but I just don't want to keep an average guy around anymore, you know? But you have to find the right guy. Like, I wouldn't fire him yet, but I'd be like, hey, I would be talking to whoever you think the three best coaches are in college football that you think you can get. And if one of them says yes, then I got to get rid of Tom Herman.
Baylor. Baylor found the right guy. Matt Rhule was the right guy. Iowa State found the right guy. Texas, to me, if you ever pull up the Big 12 standings and it's not Texas and Oklahoma in some order at the top, I know you can't do it immediately. You can't just magically transform something, but that's the proper order of the Big 12. There is no way that the school in Waco or the school in Fort Worth is better than UT. There's no way. It's just it can't be. And if that's what's happening, then you're being outcoached, because Baylor is not out recruiting Texas. That ain't happening. Oklahoma State is not out recruiting Texas. It ain't happening.
That's weird.
Iowa State is not out recruiting Texas. So it's on what you're doing when you get them.
Elsewhere in the world of college football, Penn State fans chased their own QB off social media. They made him quit. Starting QB Sean Clifford. I've completely deleted all social media after the Minnesota game. It's kind of sad to say how some fans get. It gets a little crazy. I was kind of sick and tired of getting death threats and some pretty explicit and tough-to-read messages. But you learn how to deal with certain things and how certain people are going to react, because it's a very passionate game with a lot of passionate people. Yeah, I suppose dealing with all that negativity from the fans and having to cope with it and all that would be a positive. Hey, yeah. I'm getting some pretty good life skills here on how to be mentally tough.
We're not players, and I didn't play in the era of social media, luckily. But I can't tweet during Cowboy games anymore. Like, I haven't tweeted during a Cowboy game in 2 years. Because of things that would come back at me. And I'm just like, I can't, I'm not doing it anymore. I'll text you guys, or I'll text my friends, or I'll call up my dad, but I'm not putting anything else on social media during a Cowboy game, because it's just craziness. How do you guys handle that? Because I'm on Twitter during the game, like, looking at things.
I'll tweet during the game, but I don't generally, like, look at responses. I just hit send and that's it. Because, I mean, and college football fans are the craziest of the crazy.
Yeah,
they're absolutely the most insane fans, other than maybe soccer overseas.
Yeah,
it's college football fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your
the most provincial.
Your quarterback, who you pull for every week, and when you see him on campus, you worship him. It's like, oh my God, there he goes. But then you have a game where you lose to a ranked opponent, and it's a death threat. College football fans are insane.
Yeah, that is crazy.
A lot of it has to do with booze.
And Penn State fans might take the cake. You know, fans in the South, I think, get a reputation as being maybe a little bit more diehard or more crazy or insane when it comes to how they handle losses and all that. But these Penn State guys up there, boy, death threats to your quarterback? You got to be kidding me. You're having a great year. LSU remains atop the college football playoff rankings. How well do they match up? Could this be LSU's year? Do you think they're
going to be
taking care of business in both playoff games?
Yeah. Oh, I think
Who has the best chance to take them down?
Ohio State. I think Ohio's, well, Clemson is rolling people. Clemson's so hard to gauge, because they're going to go the entire season without playing a good team. And then they're going to play the playoff. But they are rolling.
Let me ask you this. Do you think LSU gets an easy game in the semifinal? I think Ohio State versus Clemson is a 50-50 awesome game. But I'm just getting the feeling that LSU, whoever they play, it's going to be an LSU victory.
And my guess on who the fourth ranked team is
like either, at the end of the year, who do you think it'll be?
It'll either be Oregon.
I think so.
Or Alabama.
Yeah.
And either way, I mean, LSU already beat Alabama with their real quarterback. So their backup quarterback, I think they would do it again.
I think they're going to put in the Pac-12 champion.
I do too, unless Georgia beats LSU in the SEC championship.
I think
championship.
The Pac-12 not very good.
I do too. Oregon and Utah are good, but I don't think it's that good. I'm a little bit surprised that Oregon and Utah are both ahead of the entire Big 12 in the rankings, but that tells you everything you need to know about how it's going to end.
One loss Oregon or Utah ahead of one loss Bama? Or are they going to lose again without Tua?
No, I would say ahead of one loss Alabama.
Because they don't have Tua?
Yes.
Okay.
If Alabama rolls Auburn in the back and their backup quarterback looks awesome, then maybe they can stick around.
I think the Pac-12 gets in the extra game, too. Alabama won't get to play in the championship game, so I'm just thinking
that
they're going to see whoever it is. Oregon beat Utah, and then would Oregon play Utah again? I'm not exactly sure the Pac-12 deal. But and then if they win that again, they're just going to look at it and go, look, we already have LSU – In for the SEC, and we're good. Let's put a Pac-12 team in.
Is something fishy? You guys think something seem fishy to you?
No.
Something seem off?
I don't think anything's fishy. What are you talking about?
Because Mike Fisher's coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time to catch up with Mike Fisher. I love this Zeke quote here. He was asked about back-to-back games where he didn't get much going on the ground. He said, "You guys make me feel awkward, like I'm supposed to be ticked off because I had 40 yards and we won a football game." That's a good answer from Zeke right there. As they're at practice today and tomorrow and Friday, getting set to visit the Patriots. Let's talk to Mike Fisher about that. Maybe get in some Mavs as well, as the Mavs are going to host Golden State tonight. Segment's brought to you by In-N-Out Burger, Classic Chevrolet, and by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident, it's not your fault. Call the office of Frankel & Frankel, 214-333-3333. Official lawyers of the Tolo there. FrankoFirm.com. How the hell are you, Fish?
He's in the building!
I'm outstanding, and I'm in a very positive frame of mind regarding your Cowboys. We'll get to that in a minute. But 24 hours ago, we teased, hey, let's talk about a Mavericks blockbuster trade.
All right.
Because they're first of all, the Mavericks right now, there's no question about it. They're wildly entertaining, right?
Yes.
They are incredibly promising.
Uh-huh.
Agree to that?
Yeah.
Okay. But they're only almost good.
Well, yeah, I'd say they're good, but they're not real contender good.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, I mean, I think now they're playoff good, I think.
Fifth in the West.
And now we've seen the Spurs, and the Spurs aren't playoff good.
No.
And we're going to see the Warriors tonight, and they're not playoff good.
Blazers aren't playoff good. San Antonio's not playoff good.
Yeah, so... maybe the timing is just right. So we proposed yesterday, what if the Mavericks do what they did last February? Go engineer a blockbuster trade for somebody who doesn't quite fit where he's at. He's a star. He's not perfect, but he takes you to a next level. I offer you Mike Bacsik, Blake Griffin, Detroit Pistons.
Oh, I thought you were offering me. I was like... I could shoot, but that was over 20 years ago.
We will throw you and Tim Hardaway Jr. into the deal.
The Pistons need somebody for their flagship radio station.
Yeah. Oh, man. That would be I'd call if I'm hard on the Cowboys, can you imagine if I had to do Lions radio with their one win in 57 years in the playoffs?
That would be brutal.
Yeah, Lions and Pistons. And what are the Red Wings are still probably good. How about the Tigers?
They are, I think, the worst team in the American League, if I recall. Yeah. They're one of the worst.
Speaking for Dallas-Fort Worth, Bacsik, I think we'll just keep you.
Okay, thank you. I'm very interested in Blake Griffin. They're 4-9 this year. I know the Pistons, so we got to hope they keep losing so that they are entertained with offers to some of their players.
Now, let's understand the game here. And at DallasBasketball.com, Mike, as you know, because you've been a contributor, we've been doing this for 20 years now.
I used to be on the chat boards all the time.
Yep. When we do these projects... Number one, we are not reporting that the Cowboys are, or the Mavericks are trading for Blake Griffin. So don't do that to us. That's not what's happening. But we are also not just completely making stupid junk up. We're trying to put puzzle pieces together. And Mike, you can please nod your head at this because I know this. A lot of the time when we do this, we've run it by people involved, right?
Yes.
The people involved are telling us, yeah, you should write that. That has some viability. So here we go. I want Blake Griffin. He makes a fortune there. He makes $34 million this year and $37 million next year.
Perfect. They'll want to get that off the books.
Yes.
And listen, I don't really care how much he makes if he moves me up a level as a contender.
Can we fit it under the cap? All right.
Okay, so the Pistons receive, and Dalton Trigg and Matt Galatson do a great job on this stuff, and hat tip to them. You give Jalen Brunson, who is a player. That's an NBA starter, and he's young. He's the guy that Rick Carlisle, like Jalen Brunson, like practiced one time before Rick Carlisle pronounced him. He said, "Boy, he's a real pro." I'm like, Rick, he just got here, but he just carries himself that way. Out goes Jalen Brunson. Out goes Dwight Powell. Out goes Tim Hardaway and the money. A 2020 second round pick. A 2025 first round pick, because that's the next first round pick that you can give. And the Pistons, who aren't going anywhere, get out from under Blake Griffin, and they get two good young players in Jalen Brunson and Dwight Powell. Now, how realistic is this? Well, compare it to last year. How realistic was Kristaps Porzingis till it happened?
I didn't imagine it was possible.
So let's chase that same pipe dreamy path and look for teams that are tired of their guy and the guy's tired of them. He's making too much money. They're not going anywhere, and they want to start over. And I think this is and it's getting a lot of traction, of course, on Twitter at Fish Sports, because people do love their Mavericks, especially now, because there's a chance with something like this for the Mavericks to go from being interesting and fun and pretty good to a next level with somebody like Blake Griffin.
So, yeah, what are the other options? I do like the idea of Blake Griffin. He's a little bit injury prone. I don't think he's much of a creator of shots. You know, I think he's a finisher. So as long as Luka's on the court, you know, Blake Griffin and Porzingis are catching a lot. But I would like to if I could, if I'm going to put $35 million on the payroll, I want a guy who can – you know, be a wing and a ball handler and be like a triple threat from beyond the arc, you know?
I would love the Mavericks to be able to come up with a player who was a creator. What they have right now, by and large, is a collection of guys who stand around and wait for Luka to pass it to them, and then we all cross our fingers that they make the shot.
Uh-huh.
So I'm with you on that. Although Blake Griffin creates in the post once you give him the ball, and obviously, he's still a muscular rebounder. But by the way, hats off to Porzingis, because I thought, didn't you, Bassick? I thought the Mavericks would be a bad rebounding team again this year.
I didn't think they'd be as bad as last year after they traded DeAndre Jordan, but I didn't think they'd be good. And he's gotten better as the season's progressed.
No doubt.
He's gotten better.
I was afraid that he was going to average 4 rebounds a game. I really was. I thought he'd... And, of course, he does stand out at the three-point line and shoot a lot of them. He shot 9 of them the other night. But he'll also give you double-doubles. He's got a good handful of 10-rebound games. So this is a fun idea that's not completely preposterous. So Blake Griffin, a trade idea that we throw out there, and we can kick it around here on The Fan and also, of course, on social media.
I look forward to it. What else is what else is going on with the Mavs, or do you want to talk Cowboys?
Well, one more thing on the Mavericks, and – every time the subject of Skip Bayless comes up, people say, Fish, why do you hate Skip Bayless? And I probably need to – I've written about it before, and we've talked about it before. We've done entire segments. But maybe it's time for me to just update what a cancerous person he is. And no, I'm not jealous of the fact he makes $5 million, and either should you be, because you couldn't trade lives with Skip Bayless, because a person with a conscience couldn't sleep at night if they were Skip Bayless, if they traded lives with him. So his latest assault on excellence, his latest attempt to leech himself like a barnacle to the side of greatness, is his decision that Luka Doncic really isn't that good.
Oh, wow.
And it's so predictable, and yet, now luckily, I think most people in Dallas-Fort Worth don't fall for Skip's con game anymore, because we have a background here. We saw it in action for years and years and years here. But nationally, of course, he's still selling enough subscriptions and advertising and whatever that he makes $5 million. And God bless you poor SOBs who are still suckered in by Skip Bayless, who is a human hemorrhoid who climbed on top of Luka Doncic today, and like a cockroach, the cockroach that will not die. And he lifted up his little tiny cockroach leg and he urinated on the greatness of Luka Doncic. Mm. And then, because he's also a human hemorrhoid, actually, maybe he's a hemorrhoid on a cockroach. Then after he urinated on Luka Doncic, some pus seeped out.
Wow.
And it's
quite
bad
a visual.
For journalism. It's bad for journalism. It's bad for sports. It's bad for fun. And I'm so sad for the people that will tweet at me saying, yeah, but Skip, he really loves the Spurs. No, he doesn't. Bassick, chime in. He doesn't like the Spurs. He doesn't hate the Spurs. He's not against LeBron James. He's not for LeBron James. He's not for or against anything except stealing your money, you doofus. So quit giving it to him.
That dude is mad.
I did get to work on that show Cold Pizza for 3 days in 2007, and the way you explain it on how he has to choose the kind of side to take, as long as he hasn't chosen a side, you know, years before or months before, it really does happen during the commercial break where he chooses his side. It really does.
So the thing that is in question is he said Luka's not Bird. He doesn't have the dog in him. He doesn't have the killer instinct. It's just wrong.
First of all, it really is wrong based on what we've seen. Because Gavin, you watch Luka Doncic now. You've seen him play 100 games.
Yeah.
And you're qualified to disagree. That slappy, he hasn't watched Luka play for 100 seconds.
Yeah.
And Bassick, your testimony is exactly right. And you know what? If a Tolo ever found out that somebody at this station did that during the break, Kavanaugh and Bassick said, okay, which one of us is going to decide we like Pudge Rodriguez and which one is going to decide we hate him? Let's flip a coin. We deserve to be exposed. So that kind of charlatanism is why I find Skip Bayless so offensive.
The day I was there, it was a dude from Detroit, and I forget his name, skinny dude, was doing the show with him. And it was Romo versus Favre, because this is 07, and this is, you know, the great year for the Cowboys, and I think they were having a really good year in Green Bay too. And Skip, remember, he's a huge Cowboy fan. I'm pretty sure he is.
He actually,
on that day, though, because he didn't really know much about Romo, but knew more about Brett Favre, because yeah. Romo was somewhat of an unknown in 07 if you weren't following the Cowboys. He's like, right. I got Brett Favre on this one. And so then the Detroit guys having to scramble, like knowing nothing about Tony Romo, and I sitting on the other couch, because this wasn't my segment, because I was there for baseball playoffs, I then started feeding him as much information as I could about Tony Romo.
I believe it. Listen, Tolo, listen to Bassick, who lived with him for a few days. Listen to me. I lived with him for 10 years. He's a piece of excrement. And we should not take seriously his criticisms of Doncic, because that's what he wants us to do. We should move on and understand that there are those of us at this radio station and in this city who go to a bunch of Mavericks practices, a bunch of Mavericks games. We talk to everybody involved. Don't take away our Luka Doncic joy just because you're trying to cash a check.
Okay. He's 20 years old, and I would say if you've been watching Luka Doncic, you could say he is mentally tough. I mean, you don't have to be getting into people's faces and trying to start fights to prove you're a dog. You can just go about your business and not be intimidated by anybody, and that's plenty enough dog for me.
You know what he's done in a preseason game and an early regular season game? He didn't start the fight, but he finished it by not backing down from his tormentor. Yeah. Luka Doncic is not a bad defensive player. That's a farce. Luka Doncic is not a dog in the clutch. If you make game-winning plays, does that not count as a dog?
I think it does.
He makes more game-winning plays than anybody in basketball, literally. And the numbers say it so. We don't have to pretend that he's Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Larry. Let's give this some time. But to argue that he's – to have some vehement argument against Luka Doncic when statistically he is doing Bird, Jordan, Magic, Oscar, LeBron things, you're taking away from your own joy because you are a farcical cockroach.
He lied!
Appreciate it. Good insults. I like that charlatan word. I'm going to have to try to look that up and use it in a sentence.
All right, since the 24-hour tease works so beautifully, Gavin, I've been listening to your whole show today, and you know I love you like my cousin.
Salute.
About an hour ago, you said that you're worried that the Cowboys are going to lose at New England, and that's a legitimate worry. But 7 days ago, you said, I'm worried the Cowboys are going to lose at Detroit.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, if you would don't mind, let's roundtable this a little bit. Let's analyze why we think that, and then let's spend a little time figuring out, hey, wait a minute, though. The Cowboys did win at Detroit. How did they do it? Can any of that be applied to winning at New England, where the Cowboys, of course, are a 6.5-point underdog?
You can tease it. You can plan it, Fish, but I don't think you got the dog in you for that debate. There he goes. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. Baseball Nuggets coming up next. Where are we going with that? Oh, Mike on.
The Rangers could be bringing back a guy that used to be their catcher.
That's
okay. A horrible tease.
Yeah, it wasn't a good
tease. I didn't
write
down my tease, and I tried to do it off the top of my head.
Uh-huh. Yep.
F-.
Yep.
Southwest Kia is home of the all-new Kia Telluride. That is an 8-passenger SUV. Check it out at southwestkia.com.
All righty, Cowboys Twitter's coming up at 4. Here's Mike Bassick with your baseball nuggets.
All right, first a shout-out to all those Tolos out there that went to the Bishop Dunn event last night. It was just fun being there. I don't know, about 600-something people, but quite a few people came up and were like, hey, Tolo. So,
sweet.
Really cool just to get to meet a lot of new people that listen to our station. So,
you get them some decals?
I didn't bring decals to the event, but I did talk to people. I didn't give them my autograph. That costs money.
That's right.
But
big money.
I did shake their hand.
Know
That's
your
free.
Worth. You know, yeah. Know your value, Mike.
Yeah, I'm turning into Emmett now. Yeah. Like, you know what? Talk to my father or talk to my agent if you want an autograph.
We need to get on your and Emmett's level. You know?
Yeah, true. Okay, so my tease. Horrible tease, but there was a tease there. The Rangers are interested and are talking to Robinson Chirinos to possibly bring him back. It says the Mets, Astros, Reds, and Rangers have talked to Robinson Chirinos so far in this offseason. And I would say for the Rangers, I would like to bring him back. I don't know if they're going to try to go after Yasmani Grandal, who is the cream of the crop when it comes to free agent catchers. Contreras is possibly trade from the Chicago Cubs. I don't know how interested they are in trading the people. They've just thrown it out there that they're willing to trade the Chicago Cubs. So there are other options that would be considered probably better long-term, more productive players. But Robinson Chirinos is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Robinson Chirinos is loved by the players in every locker room he goes to. He's older. I believe he's 33 or 34 years old. I don't have his age in front of me, but I know he's right around there. This would not be a long-term fix at the position. I think what it would be is Robinson Chirinos and Jose Trevino sharing the role as catcher next year. But like you talked about earlier, Jeff, a couple of weeks ago, I don't think you can bring back Jeff Mathis. I know
back
he has
150, baby. Let's get it.
I don't know if it's fully guaranteed, but he did sign a 2-year contract, and I don't know if the second year is fully guaranteed. But I think what Jeff Mathis did last year, I don't think you can have him on your major league team because you just can't have a guy batting in the 150s for a
season.
Have
some respect for your organization.
Well, great point by the Autoflex Leasing fan text, Mike, 877-881-1053. Chirinos is a cheater.
What
he
happened?
Wasn't on that team. Oh. He's only on the Astros last year. It's 2000.
You don't think they cheated last year?
I don't. No.
I had assumed that this would be a thing that, sure, you're being kind of caught for 17, but you guys are doing this.
Well, what they did is, and I can't remember what year, either it was the beginning of last year or in 2018, they said no cameras at all can be installed besides the cameras of, like, the TV cameras from foul pole to foul pole. So if they did do it in 2019, which nobody is saying anything happened in 2019, I think that they would be in super big trouble. I think this goes back to 2017 when
they thought multiple teams talked about it this year. Like the Yankees
were
worried about having their signs stolen.
I do, and I think that they were trying different things, but I don't think, this is my opinion,
okay.
I don't know. I don't think they stuck a camera in the outfield. They could have, and if they are exposed in 2019 for doing that, when they specifically had, it wasn't technology, it was, you can't have a camera in the outfield that belongs to your organization. It can only be the television cameras out in the outfield videotaping anything or obviously sending signals somewhere.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I can't wait till the investigation comes out, but I've looked at it kind of like they're the Patriots, and they're pushing the envelope on everything to steal signals, and some things in the past were against the rules, but I think most stuff is up on the up and up now. They're just trying really hard at it and are good at it.
Okay, you ready for me to get big time political on you?
Let's do this.
Okay, big time political. Republicans and Democrats. Are you ready, Republicans and Democrats?
We're ready.
Is this Sondland?
No.
Oh.
You guys agree
Epstein?
On nothing.
Okay.
I think we can all agree that Republicans and Democrats agree on very, very little. We have found something that almost all of them are agreeing on, and that is Major League Baseball is trying to eliminate 26% of the minor leagues, upwards of 42, 43 teams.
Wow.
Well, almost all of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, because that's eliminating a lot of cities that have these teams, they're all going after Major League Baseball. So if you were wondering, can Democrats and Republicans get along? I found a deal where they can. They can get along on eliminating minor league teams. They have sent a letter to Major League Baseball saying, you're not doing this. You're not eliminating 40-something teams because you're going to hurt cities that we represent. And wow. The only reason they're doing this is because that a law has been passed that you treat your minor leaguers worse than minimum wage people,
yeah.
And you guys have to pay them. Here's what they get paid, just so you know, Tolo's out there. If you're playing A-ball, your salary is $1,160 a month for 5 months. That is $5,800 for the year to play A-ball. That is, in 142 games, you get paid per game, and you don't just show up for the game. You do have to show up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. For that game, you get paid $40.85. So per game, as an A-ball guy, you get paid $40.85 before taxes.
Oh, 13 bucks an hour, man. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
You got a signing bonus.
And so if you're in AAA, one level below the major leagues, right now that salary is $2,150. That equals out to $75.70 per game to play AAA baseball. So just, it's kind of one of these things where just to know, like when you think there's a lot of money in baseball, there is if you make the major leagues.
But they made Congress take notice because they were being a little bit too greedy with the minor leaguers.
Yeah, because so what they're doing is they're like, oh, well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, if you want us to pay, you know, $1,500 a year to A-ball guys and $3,000 a month to AAA guys, well, then that's fine. We're just going to eliminate, every team gets to eliminate at least one, if not two, minor league teams to do it. So they wouldn't expand their salary at all in the minor leagues. They would just eliminate minor leagues. And so Congress is furious with this. So I don't know if Major League Baseball is going to be able to eliminate these teams. What they're saying is, well, we went around and there's 40 plus complexes that don't get to the requirements we need for the field conditions or for the clubhouse or for whatever it is. And these little cities in like North Carolina are like, look, you're asking us to put $3 million into this stadium. We can improve it a little bit or we can do this and that, but you guys are asking us to put the world in. And when somebody asks you to pay these kids an extra $200 to $300 a month so that they could be getting paid at least minimum wage, you guys are just going to eliminate everything?
Yeah, that's horrible. It's a bad look for Major League Baseball. But I don't know how I feel about, you know, Congress telling Major League Baseball you have to keep your teams or you have to pay the players this amount.
Yeah.
But doesn't MLB get some sort of legal protection or monopoly protection that they kind of got to go along with what Congress says to keep that, right?
Yes, that's how the whole steroid thing happened, what you're bringing up, and I forget what it is. But, yeah, they can keep their books closed. They never have to open up their books to anybody.
They have an effective monopoly, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but they don't have to obey all the rules of it.
But when Congress says if you don't start testing for steroids, we're going to take that away. So if Congress here, it didn't say is what I read, at least I didn't see that, but the Congress is furious. A lot of these congressmen and women that are in cities that have minor league teams have told Major League Baseball, you're not doing this.
That's a lot of votes. That'd be career suicide to be involved in watching Major League Baseball take away, you know, the minor league teams.
Yeah.
You know, that's tons of cities and constituents.
Mike, I just want to point out that Adrian in the Fan Tolo group on Facebook is taking issue with your autograph claims about how expensive it is.
Yeah.
He just bought one off of eBay for $2. He got an autograph card.
Yeah.
And then he shared a picture. He actually has four of them. He has four autographed Mike Bassett cards. So he says your autograph is not as expensive as you claim.
Okay, well, that's why I have too many out there.
I'm trying to rebuild the value.
Yeah, I'm trying to lower the marketplace. I've signed too much for $0, so okay. I gotta let it. If you want it, you should go to eBay and hurry up and jump on it because it's gonna be tougher to get. I might change my autograph and say that's not my actual autograph.
I like that strategy.
Okay, a couple more baseball nuggets. They're trying to bring baseball to Orlando. Brian Williams.
Good luck.
That brought the Orlando Magic to the NBA. Look, nobody cares. Nobody cares to go to a game in Tampa Bay. You do have a terrible stadium. Nobody cares to go to a game in Miami, and you actually have a brand new stadium. I know you don't have a good team, but still nobody cares. Nobody cares to go to sporting events in the state of Florida. It just, they go to college, and I shouldn't say all sport. Florida, Florida State. When Miami's good at football in college,
when
they
the
care.
Heat are ahead, they when, stay.
Yes, yeah, so if they get sometimes. LeBron James, they yeah. care about basketball.
Yeah,
but I just don't get why Orlando or any city in the state of Florida should be kind of saying, "We need another team. Show me the team you support."
I mean, there's got to be some sort of groundswell of support, right? And some people, you can get excited about it. But if you're Major League Baseball, you look at it and you're like, I'm sorry. Yeah. You got to blame your other cities and your state. Yeah. You know, it's not specifically you, but every time we've tried this, it's not yeah. gone well. We're actually thinking about having less teams in Florida, as a matter
yes,
of fact.
Yes, in so. Fact, I know that the Rangers, this goes to a crosstalk, I know that the Rangers and the Astros refuse to do this. But if you're going to add another team to a state that has multiple teams, you add a team to San Antonio. San Antonio will probably draw 20 to 40,000 people if you got a brand new stadium and a Major League Baseball team there.
All right, there you have it. Baseball Nuggets daily at 3:40. Coming up next, it is Cowboys Twitter. You know the team is actually dominating these awards. Let's talk about that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.